Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, Ed Dowd joins us to talk about the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank and, as he calls it, the collapse of the American economy. Sure hope he's wrong. And then Dave McCormick joins us to talk about a battle plan against the Chinese Communist Party. Email us your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Subscribe to the Charlie Kirk Show podcast. Open up your podcast app and type in Charlie Kirk Show. Get involved with Turning Point USA today at tpusa.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the Loan Experts I Trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. The chancellor of UC Davis has released this hostage video that he was obviously forced to make by the people around him. He's got to be really careful with what he was saying here. He's got to be really careful because the president basically says that I abhor his speech and nothing can be more powerful than him speaking to an empty room. Whoa, whoa, hold on. That could be speech stifling by a university that's supposed to be neutral. We're going to fight back. We're not going to let this happen. And he says this guy advocates for violence. I've never advocated. That's a lie. One day someone's going to be held accountable legally for this. I want to talk here just for a second about how you guys can get your tickets to our upcoming campus tour, tpusa.com, and get your tickets there. I had a great opportunity to go to the border with someone that really impressed me, someone that should be a senator for the great state of Pennsylvania. And maybe he'll do something in the future that is exciting because he definitely needs to be in leadership. But he's the author of a great new book, Superpower in Peril, A Battle Plan to Renew America. And it's David McCormick joins us now. Dave, welcome to the program.
Hey, Charlie. Thanks so much for having me. How are you?
I'm doing well. Tell us about your new book, Dave.
Well, I started the book before I decided to run for office. I started in 2020. And it was based on the belief that the country was headed in the wrong direction. We were in decline, economically, national security-wise, spiritually. And decline is not inevitable, but neither is a renewal. And it depends on what we do. So this is the What We Should Do book. And I got about 60% of it done. And then I ran for office, which you and I visited together then, and then sadly lost. And I could finish the book. And it essentially lays out a plan to educate our people, to confront China, mm-hmm. and to secure America. And it's a very prescriptive book. I think we're only going to win as Republicans and conservatives if we have great candidates, but we have great ideas. And this is my attempt to try to help that debate.
Well, let's talk about the China issue. There's so many different issues there, from the Confucius Institutes to the Belt and Road Initiative to the cyber issue to the economic issue. So you can start wherever you like. But from your perspective, you ran one of the most successful firms in America for quite some time. It was amazing what you were able to do there. And so you understand economics really well and the financial implications. And so if you were to say the Chinese Communist Party is a direct threat to America, because why, Dave?
China is a direct, and the Chinese Communist Party is a direct threat because their techno-authoritarian model is gaining ground on America for global primacy. There was a great report, a great article in the Wall Street Journal a couple weeks ago, Charlie, which was from a think tank in Australia that analyzed the 44 most critical technologies for economics and national security, satellites, robotics, mm-hmm. artificial intelligence, and so forth. The Chinese are in the lead in 37, according to that analysis. So they are beating us. They have a plan for global primacy by stealing technology, by creating indigenous technology based on the ideas of others. And they're investing an enormous amount of capital in that. And we don't have a plan. And so this book, among other things, lays out a plan for how we can recover our leadership. And that leadership, their model, if you had to bet on our model or their model over the next 20 years, you'd bet on our model. But what's happened recently is because we weren't paying attention, they have become a dominant technological force and a real threat to America's role in the world. And that's that's what this book is about, is laying out a plan for building muscle, going to the gym at home to build our own capabilities, but confronting China abroad. And I have a chapter on how I do that too, which I'm happy to talk about. But we need to have a whole of nation strategy for taking on China. Right now it's piecemeal. It's indecisive. We need a whole nation strategy for bringing China to heel.
So a provocative idea that some people have floated out that I sympathize with on moral terms, but I also understand that it's rather aggressive, is it time to decouple? I mean, there are some really thoughtful people that are talking about that economically. That's a harsh measure. That would definitely mean that there would be rising costs and probably economic uncertainty. But is that something we should be entertaining, or at the very least, you know, identify 10 or 20, 30 different sectors where you say, we want to make this? Your thoughts?
What I call it in the book is strategic decoupling. Mm-hmm. And listen, I was shocked, Charlie. I can't believe it. And I know I should follow and know such things, but that our pharmaceutical supply chains during COVID were so dependent on China. I was, I knew we were highly dependent on microchips, but 90% of the microchips that we require are manufactured 90 miles from mainland China in Taiwan. So it is an absolute travesty that we have an entire semiconductor industry, which is critical to every aspect of national security and economic well-being, that's offshore. So that's a perfect example where we need to decouple. There are a number of areas where we need to bring those capabilities home or have them within our closest allies where we can be dependent on it. And that's going to have implications for our ability to have manufacturing jobs here at home in very positive ways. It may raise costs, but it'll create actual security. Whether we should take the final step and, you know, make sure that t-shirts and sneakers and things like that can be manufactured in China.
Yeah, that's less important. The textiles is not as important, right? I mean, vitamin C, for example, is important, right? 95% of it is made in mainland China.
Technology, yeah, I agree with that. Technology, pharmaceuticals, the things that when you wake up in the middle of the night and said, would we want our biggest adversary who may have, or does have very negative intentions in terms of our role in the world vis-a-vis them, would we want them to have control? And if the answer is no, we need to bring it home. And so there's a number of thoughtful people making this case. Tom Cotton's one of them.
He's been great.
He's very much headed in the right direction on this strategic decoupling. But that's only one side of it. The other side is investing abroad. And as you said, I ran an investment firm for a number of years. Today in America, there are investors, venture capitalists in California that invest in artificial intelligence companies in China that do business with the PLA. So that's unacceptable. We need to have an outbound investment review process that makes sure that we're not doing anything that's going to enable our adversary to be able to challenge us on the global stage. And so that would be a second piece of a whole nation strategy. The third is to hold China accountable for the Wuhan lab, for human rights abuses.
Fentanyl? I mean,
exactly. The fentanyl crisis in Pennsylvania, Charlie, we talked about this on our border trip, 5,000 deaths last year in Pennsylvania. So we've got to hold a hard line on these issues with China. And then finally, and we need to do more of this, but we have some very critical allies, Japan, Australia, some of the Five Eye intelligence companies, countries, New Zealand, the UK, where we should really combine our strategies around technology and trade and national security even more fully than we do. We don't have to bear all the cost of this. We need to have our most trusted allies in line with this. President Trump did some good work along those lines, and we need to continue to build on it.
One of my concerns, though, to get this done, again, the book is Superpower in Peril, some amazing ideas in it, is the elite capture that China has been able to successfully embark on, right? The fact you're saying this, Dave, would make you kind of, you know, persona non grata in certain circles, right? If you work for the NBA and you were talking like this, you're not allowed to say that because their growth market is mainland China. How do we solve that? Solve the issue of elite capture?
Well, I think elite capture is a problem relative to China, but it's a problem more broadly across an entire progressive agenda that I fear is taking our country in a really terrible direction. But I think on China, we need to highlight the issue. I think we need to talk substantively about the implications of being dependent on China the way we are, and we need to have serious people. Someone I'd like to put myself forward is one such person who's done business around the world. We've done business in China. I've run companies. I've been in the highest levels of government. I've been in the military. We need to have a serious conversation about the implications of our continued relations with China and how they need to evolve. And I think that's starting to happen. Mike Gallagher's committee, I think, is a good step forward. I think it's going to need to be bipartisan. I think there's a growing consensus. So I'm optimistic we're finally at least having the right conversations. I think serious people need to take it on.
The book is very important, and it's a thoughtful book, Superpower in Peril, A Battle Plan to Renew America by David McCormick. Hey, everybody, Charlie Kirk here. Why do I tell you about Balance of Nature every single day? It's really quite simple. Balance of Nature is real food. It's real science, and it's real nutrition. I take it every day. It's so easy. 31 whole fruits and veggies in a capsule. I know a lot of people who take supplements and formulated nutrition packs, but Balance of Nature goes right to the source. Real fruits and veggies, all that nutrition captured with their advanced vacuum cold process, packed in a capsule and sent to your doorstep. I give my body what it needs because feeling great is important to me. Getting good daily nutrition is the foundation of all aspects of good health. And that is why you hear me talking about Balance of Nature on my show. Shipping is always free, but don't forget to get a 35% off your first order as a preferred customer by using discount code Charlie when you go to balanceofnature.com. You can order by phone by calling 800-246-8751 or go to balanceofnature.com. They're a terrific product. I take it every day. Check it out. Balanceofnature.com, discount code Charlie. Balanceofnature.com, discount code Charlie. So, David, as we talk about this rallying cry against China, it has to be an above-all approach. And what I like about what you've done in the book is you talk about it in military terms, battle plan, right, with your experience being in the military. And I want to focus on the specifics of one of the things you mentioned, which is holding China accountable, because that's a question about justice, right? Justice for fentanyl, justice for hacking our cyber grid, justice for spying on us, justice for having a spy balloon over our sky, you know, justice for whatever happened in the Wuhan Institute of Virology, which could have been, you know, attributed to sloppiness, but definitely there was a cover-up, right, in the days and the weeks that followed. What does justice look like then, David, to hold them accountable and make them pay an appropriate price?
Well, I think it starts with calling balls and strikes. And, you know, the Biden administration hasn't done that, for example, on the Wuhan lab. And that's a real problem, because if you're not constantly bringing forward the things that are unacceptable behavior, and taking steps to mitigate them, or taking steps to hold accountable through sanctions or a variety of other things, then that behavior gets validated, and the belief is that that's okay to do again. And so spy balloon's another example that should have been handled much more decisively, with a clear line established that, hey, this is unacceptable over U.S. airspace, and all of these things are part of a leadership under Joe Biden that's very ham-handed. It's very uncertain. We saw that in Afghanistan, mm-hmm. with the bungled withdrawal. We saw that in Ukraine with the Nord Stream 2 and the invitation of Putin. And we see that with the Chinese. And the problem with being ham-handed and bungling things in a leadership perspective, if you're up against an aggressive opponent, it's much easier to have a miscalculation. So you need to be strong. We need to build muscle at home by going, yes, to the gym. But you also need to reflect strength in your actions and your decisiveness. And I think we've had neither. And this book tries to lay out a path for being both strong. And you know, the toughest guys I knew in the Army when I was in the 82nd Airborne weren't the ones who were talking the most. They were the guys, the meanest, toughest guys were the guys who were quietly tough. So I don't think it's just rhetoric. I think you got to be strong. And then on top of that, you have to draw lines and say, this is unacceptable behavior and there are consequences. And I don't think we've done either under this administration.
Xi Jinping was just, I put in quotes, reelected, right? Unanimously. One, there would not dare be a defector. Any defectors are no longer living, probably. How should we think about Xi Jinping as a person? This is something that I'm sure you've thought deeply about. Is it more about him, or is it more about the CCP? Is it a mixture of both? I mean, what does it tell us?
A mixture of both.
Please, explain.
You know, U.S. and Chinese interest, there was a hope. There was a hope 20 years ago that I think a misguided hope, but there was a hope that the way that relationship would evolve is that there would be economic relations and those would benefit both countries, and that the more exposure China got to the United States, the more there'd be a move towards liberty and democracy and human rights. That was a misguided notion. Certainly the political a notion was a misguided notion. But what's happened over time is there's been a steady divergence where it's clear that China was stealing our technology. It's clear that China wasn't going to be reciprocal in trade. It was clear that China was going to continue to violate human rights and project its techno-authoritarian model around the world. But that divergence grew radically when President Xi came into office. He's a dictator. He is someone that has a much more aggressive view of China's role in the world and has implemented that. He's consolidated power over the military. He's projected that strength abroad. He's built coalitions. The China-Russia partnership, that coalition is unique. The thing that brings it together, it's an opposition to the United States. And so this is a very formidable. He has set China on a course that's far more aggressive, far more ambitious, far more expansionist, and far more threatening to America's role in the world. And he's establishing that vision, which will, I suspect, live on after he's gone, but he won't be gone for quite some time. And that's the vision we're going to have to deal with.
Superpower in Peril, A Battle Plan to Renew America. David, thank you so much for joining us. I encourage everyone to check out the book. Thank you so much.
Charlie, thank you. Good to see you.
This new year, you've got goals, and Factor is here to help you achieve each and every one of them. Fuel up fast with the ready-to-eat nutrition meals delivered straight to your door, leaving you time and energy to tackle everything on your to-do list. Achieve and maintain your 2023 goals with Factor. Get America's number one ready-to-eat meal kit and start saving time eating well and living your best year yet. Too busy to cook? Well, with Factor, skip the trip to the grocery store, skip the chopping, preparing, and cleaning up too. Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are ready in 2 minutes. So all you have to do is heat up and enjoy. No matter what your lifestyle, Factor has delicious flavor-packed meals, keto, calorie smart, vegan, veggie, protein plus. So check it out right now. Check it out at factormeals.com/charlie50. That is factormeals.com/charlie50. Get Factor and enjoy clean eating without the hassle. Simply choose your meals and enjoy fresh, flavor-packed meals delivered to your door ready in just 2 minutes. No prep, no mess. Factormeals.com/charlie50 to get 50% off your first box. Joining us now is Ed Dowd, author of Cause Unknown, an author and founder of Finance Technologies, portfolio manager at BlackRock for 10 years, managing $14 billion equity growth fund. I do want to talk to you, Ed, today about the vaccine issue. I think it's really interesting, but I want to start with Silicon Valley Bank and the bank run that almost happened, didn't happen, Signature Bank. Ed, how should we think about this? What are the big lessons? And what do you think is the most obvious truth the media is missing?
So this was going to happen regardless. At the end of November of last year, M2 money supply did year-over-year negative growth. Okay, so the last time that happened was 1930. And so this is the fifth time since 1868 that's occurred. And the other four times it happened is associated with financial panics. About a month and a half ago, I put out a tweet talking about we were seeing a setup in the capital markets, different asset classes lining up to auger poor things for financial assets. And this SVB just happens to be the headline. And we're going to see what I think is rolling financial crises throughout the next year or two. I think it's going to be a controlled implosion on the way down because the Fed and the government are going to come in and do this whack-a-mole thing. And every time something rears its ugly head, they're going to respond. The markets will think everything's okay. But I think this is the beginning of the end of the global financial system as we know it, and something new is coming in the next 2 to 3 years, I suspect. This is just the end.
What is going to be coming?
I think the plan from our bettors is a central bank digital currency. And I was talking to some hedge fund managers over the weekend, and they're looking at the regional banks. They're looking at the mismatch of interest rate risk that a lot of them have. And a lot of these guys are probably going to get into trouble and eventually will be consolidated into the six systemically important banks, the big banks. That's probably the plan going forward. I don't think it was the plan in a room cackling maniacally. I think it's just what's going to end up happening. So regional banks, I think, are in trouble, and it's not going to happen overnight. It's just going to kind of happen over time as the economy continues to slide into a deep, deep recession, which is, I've been saying for the better part of, 6 months to 9 months.
So a CBDC, how would that technically be different than what we already have? Would it be a currency reset? Would it be actually resetting the dollar to a different valuation? I mean, how would that be any?
Yeah, I'm not in the room, so I don't know. But the idea behind a central bank digital currency is it allows the regimes of the globe to have more control over your decision making. So it's the Bank of International Settlements a year and a half ago, some one of the senior guys there made a famous speech saying that once we introduce the CBDC, we'll be able to have more control over what money is and where we can direct it according to what we think. And, you know, that just sounds like total control to me.
Yeah, and I suppose the argument they're going to make is that paper money's already kind of been phased out, and so everything we do is digital as it is. But, you know, in some ways, you're seeing this implosion of crypto. You have to wonder if it's an intentional implosion of crypto, because crypto is in some ways a threat to that, because by definition, it's decentralized. And so Ed, what you're saying is that we're going to see these, you know, kind of little bit of a crisis here and a crisis there, and they're going to bring us towards what could be, you know, the aforementioned Great Reset or, you know, the currency collapse. That doesn't give me a lot of hope. So what's the best case scenario here?
Well, so it is what it is. We're going into a deep recession, maybe a depression, don't know. But when M2 does what it just did, it's a rare event. And it's because, the U.S. dollar, which is the Federal Reserve currency of the world, is in all the corners. And, you know, the system needs constant credit creation. And after COVID, it was going to collapse in 2019. There was a crisis looming, but then COVID gave central bankers and politicians an excuse to print unprecedented amounts of money to plug the hole. That gave us another 2 years. But, you know, the math is the math, and we're at the end. So the hope is this. People are waking up to what's going on. The awareness has never been bigger. I've been kind of hip to what's going on for years. I used to feel alone. More and more people, well-credentialed experts, are saying the same thing that I'm saying. So there's a lot of hope. And we're going to have to, we the people have to have a seat at the table. We can't let these folks yes. go in back rooms and create a new system that no one understands. So what I'm doing personally is I use cash for every transaction. I don't, when I go out, I don't ever use my credit card.
Why?
If I can't. Because I want to thwart the system, not have a track record. And I just want to, and I'm telling other people, and I'm noticing a lot of people are using cash. And I think we just need to fight this trend towards everything digital. Now, the younger age groups love using their iPhone Pay, wallet, what have you. I just use cash. So I think as a nation, everyone should start, you know, just when you go to Costco, whenever you go to a restaurant, use cold hard cash.
Oh, you mean the stuff that's actually in your wallet, not just debit cards?
Yeah, yeah. Oh. I use the paper.
That's really yeah. medieval of you, I have to say.
Yes. Yeah.
I love it though. And it's interesting. There are so many incentives to try to get your cash into the system, to go cashless. The entire, police state of the IRS is basically set up to try to go up against cash businesses, right? For quite some time, they've been incentivized in that way. But let's go back to our just kind of some fundamental vocabulary here, because some people are asking in the chat and emails, what is M2? And explain just kind of more in layman terms the significance of what happened that only hadn't happened since 1930s. Just if you could just re-explain that for our audience, I think that would be really helpful.
So M2 is the money supply.
Okay.
Okay. And it constantly grows over time because our system is a debt-based fiat system. So credit creation is how you grow money. So the Federal Reserve prints money, then people take that money and then they lend it, and then the fractional reserve system multiplies it. It's the multiplier effect. So the credit system needs constant flow, constant credit creation. And when that stops, we have what's called a liquidity crisis. And that's what happened to Silicon Valley Bank. Let me really tell people what happened there. So during the free money times, they were constantly, the VCs are their biggest clients, and their VCs were constantly raising venture capital funds, then giving them to companies in their portfolio. Then those companies had to bank at Silicon Valley Bank because they got great terms. But one of the terms was you had to keep all your deposits on hand at Silicon Valley Bank. That was great. And their deposits were growing quite nicely. But then last year, with the turmoil we saw in tech land and the beginning of the economic turmoil recession that's looming, liquidity dried up, and interest rate increases dried up liquidity for all these VCs. So there were no more C rounds, B rounds to fund these. So basically, the deposits in Silicon Valley Bank stopped growing and actually started to slowly decline as the companies that were already in the portfolios started drawing down for operations. But there was no new companies being funded, no new rounds of financing. So their deposits just started to dwindle, but they had all these assets on their balance sheet. So that's the liquidity problem right there. And that's why Silicon Valley Bank happened to be the first accident. There'll be more, but that was the that was one of the first ones.
And then Signature also. Do you think the federal government did the right thing to fully guarantee the depositors above the $250,000 mark?
Well, we can get into debates on that. And if they didn't, this unfolding crisis would have happened a lot faster. There would have been a bank run. There would have been chaos. So I suspect they're going to keep doing this whack-a-mole scenario where they, you know, fix this, fix that. And it's going to be a lot of consternation politically. I mean, people like you, Bannon, others are going to get all up in arms about this. And on one part, I agree. On the other part, I don't want to see chaos. But it seems like this is going to be a controlled demolition. So we're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place. Do you
I sympathize with that. And I guess the provocative question is it better to have a little chaos before we go towards central bank currency totalitarianism? That's a provocative question. I mean, is there any wisdom there?
Look, if I was running the show, I'd rip the Band-Aid off, but I'm not.
Okay, so there might be some wisdom there. All right.
I would rip the Band-Aid off. Look, what happened in the Great Financial Crisis, they did not fix the problem. We had a debt problem. And how did they solve it? With more debt and more money printing. We could have let the system reset and let capitalism do what it does. We would have had a very short deflationary, maybe minor depression, but we would have rebounded out after all those institutions were wiped off the face of the earth. But what we ended up doing was trapping capital in bad assets. And we've had a zombie economy for 12 years, and only the rich get richer. Those closer to the printing press get immensely wealthy. This system needs to change. I don't know what it's going to look like, but the system is inherently flawed. It's unstable. And, every several generations, when at the end of one of these cycles, war is inevitable because somebody somewhere gets in trouble. I'm expecting China to be the one that's going to get in big trouble. They hit a demographic wall in 2020, and their biggest fear is their own people. So they have internal issues. Yep. So they're going to create a boogeyman. And who's going to be the boogeyman? You, me, and everybody in this country.
Yeah, and it does present an opportunity, though, the crisis, where because of blockchain and Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, I mean, you could theorize that there might be a couple trusted sources out there that emerge that actually have a stable ability to go back to, you know, a replacement for barter. And again, I'm just thinking out loud here. I think they have to get rid of cryptocurrency. And so without going too far into the future, though, I mean, the whack-a-mole analogy is really powerful because, you know, the federal government's just going to try to calm down the contagion of a panic. In some ways, they're almost playing, you know, societal psychologist, right? They're almost just, oh, everything's just fine. Everything's fine. Just take your meds. Everything's fine. When in reality, you know that the whole thing's about to collapse. So play this out. 45 seconds remaining, Ed. I mean, what other sectors do you think are going to be hit next? If banks go, then you have to probably speculate that the people that are getting the loans from the banks are probably going to go next.
Yeah. Any business that's not cash flow positive will go belly up. All these speculative companies that are burning cash, they go bye-bye. The other thing about this whack-a-mole scenario is that what they can't control is an international problem. And I think there's a sovereign debt crisis coming somewhere from one of these countries out there. When that goes, that's when the contagion really will become unstoppable. Right now, this is a localized, very regional bank. They're able to, you know, stop the bleeding for now, but this is going to unfold over the next 2 years. And anybody that doesn't have cash flow is in trouble.
On that uplifting and optimistic note, we are going to be back with Ed Dowd in a second. And Ed, I want to compliment you on your powerful work on the vaccine issue. Your commentary, this is one of the best dialogues we've had for quite some time. So Ed, I was speaking to a group of brainwashed college students at the University of California, Santa Barbara. And I wasn't getting anywhere, and I could use your advice and you could explain to the whole audience, what is the most compelling piece of evidence that you have discovered and that you have covered to show that the vaccine is indeed harming people? What is the one or two pieces of data that you think is the most persuasive?
I love it. This is the, what we call the elevator pitch. So two data sets, Society of Actuaries, which are group life policies at the elite corporations across the U.S., Fortune 500, mid-sized. Their excess mortality in 2021 was 40%. The general U.S. population was 32%. Typically, this group is much healthier than the general U.S. population. The Society of Actuaries has shown that in prior studies. It's in my book. It's QR coded. And they said that in any given year, group life policyholders die at one-third the mortality rate of the general U.S. population. So that inverted in 2021 and continues to this day. And there, and of course, I blame the vaccines and mandates. The second piece of data, separate data set, U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, disability data. The disability numbers were around 29 to 30 million for the prior 5 years going into 2021. Then they exploded in February from about 29 to 30 to 33.2 million. That was a three standard deviation event, which in geek speak happens 0.03% of the time. Rapid increase. Of those 3.2 million people that were added, 1.7 million are employed. When you look at the disability rate increases, employed went up 31%. The general U.S. population went up 9%. And what's even worse is those not in labor force, those are people who could work and are willing to work, their disability rate only went up 4%. Those are the people who got fired for not taking the jab or refused to take the jab and quit. So typically speaking, the employed of the country, by the very nature of going to work, aren't as disabled as the general U.S. population. And this has never happened in the history of our country. Those two pieces of data are, for me, a mic drop. That's what I presented to Senator Ron Johnson in December. And that's it. That's all we need to know.
So done here. The smart aleck college kid would say, oh, come on, causation and correlation. You don't know the vaccine is causing that. Your response would be?
My response would be, well, so did the virus mutate in 21 and 22 to only affect younger age working people, but somehow avoids those who are not employed? That's it. I mean, unless we have a new virus that knows you're working, there's no explanation for it.
If you were to put a number on it or approximate, how many people do you think died because of the mRNA gene altering shot?
So we've done a analysis. It's on our website at Finance Technologies, spelled with a PH instead of an F, in the Humanity Project tab under disabilities. We saw that for every death, there were four disabilities. So if there's 3.2 million disabilities since 2021, we came up with 800,000.
800,000. And
again, that's a rough estimate.
It's a ballpark, right? And so I suppose the question is, how have they been so successful in covering this up, or have they not been successful? Are more people open to this than ever before? Despite this, you know, they talk about it being safe and effective, 100% safe and effective. Do you feel the truth is finally starting to penetrate this web of lies?
It is. And I can tell by my social media following. It's, again, if you take Ed Dowd out of the equation, there's interest in this topic. And my Twitter followers are now increasing, you know, 1,000 a day as opposed to 100 a day. So there seems to be an awareness and an understanding that something has gone seriously off the rails. And it's spreading like wildfire word of mouth. There's still massive censorship. I've been able to get on Patrick Bet-David's podcast and Tucker Carlson and shows like yours. But it's still a struggle to get the book message out. One thing that's interesting about my book is it's not really been criticized or reviewed because it's bulletproof. And they did the same thing to the Bobby Kennedy's book about Anthony Fauci. If it's well-sourced and can't be debunked, they ignore it. So this is what's going on with me. Totally ignored.
And that's what they did to my college book. 40 pages of footnotes, and they just didn't read it. Ed, thank you so much.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yes, they just ignore it, especially when the research is rigorous. Ed, come back anytime. Thank you so much.
Take care. Have a good one.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.